Domino Angelini continuing here on a Friday morning, joined by one of the preeminent voices in college football, Paul Feinbaum, on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, obviously from the SEC Network and ESPN. Paul, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
It's a pleasure to come on. Yeah, thanks, guys. We're all in this thing together, so I appreciate you calling, and I wish we had some direction, but right now it's pretty difficult.
It is difficult. One of your colleagues, Kirk Herbstreit, one of the voices, the faces of college football as well, pretty much overnight saying that he doesn't see a way with the coronavirus and the lack of a vaccine, he doesn't see a way that football is going to be played at any level this year. What's your thoughts?
Well, I don't know, what he's basing that on. It's seemingly impossible to believe there will be a vaccine, and I say that only because I'm married to a physician, so I hear this conversation a lot at the dinner table. I'm certainly not a healthcare expert, but I know there are concerns, but I would have to say that I'm surprised to hear him make that statement. I think it's going to be difficult to get everyone back in order and have what I would call a normal college football season, high school season or NFL season, but I have no way of responding to that other than to say I don't know any more than you do or Kirk Herbstreit does.
Paul, we talk about we're missing 3-2. It was supposed to be baseball's opening day yesterday, 118-110 in the NBA and everything else. Game-wise, like watching a game, being able to talk about a game, but it's the storylines. And I know part of what you're doing and part of what we're doing is the good news is there's a historical aspect to all this. We can talk about things that have happened in the past, but how much what do you miss the most? If not the games themselves, what are you missing right now personally more than anything?
I just think seeing something to react to. I mean, every night, guys, after we do our program, I flip on the TV and there's CNN and Fox and I instinctively go to ESPN. I go to the Golf Channel. I go to Turner, looking for the NCAA tournament. I mean, it's a habit. And everyone talks about the Final Four, and I know in Atlanta that was going to be one of the highlights of the year. But to me, this is one of the great nights too. The Friday of the Sweet 16. I mean, those games are so epic usually. And I mean, I was just reflecting back a year ago on this very night. We had the North Carolina Auburn game that Auburn just went on that incredible run in the second half to advance to the Sunday round of the Sweet 16. Excuse me, to the Final Four. And I mean, I just think it's interesting. I mean, I've covered Augusta like you guys so many times. And okay, here we are. We're 3 weeks away from being over there. And those are things that are bewildering to me. Baseball, I mean, certainly any sports fan is attracted to the romantic aspect of opening day, but I just especially doing a program like we all do, you want to talk about sports in the hardcore sense, but you also, when some caller goes, hey, do you think Georgia can beat Alabama this year? I'm like going, oh my goodness. I mean, I really don't want to talk about that.
Paul Feinbaum with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. We heard from Nick Saban earlier in the week. Guys like that have to be, even though publicly they're not going to state it, they have to be losing their minds right now, like the rest of us, albeit maybe for different reasons, because we just don't know when this ending is going to be coming.
No, I find myself in every one of the conversations, and we talk to a lot of athletic directors. After you ask the perfunctory, "Well, how are you?" and how are your student athletes? My new question is, how's Dan Mullen doing? How's Nick Saban doing? How is Kirby Smart doing? Because these are guys that are wired. Listen, we're all competitive. We all have different personalities, but there's no one. I don't know. I don't know enough about the military to try to identify what a general does, although I know a few. But I would think Nick Saban, this may be affecting Nick Saban more than any person in athletics that I know. And I don't mean that facetiously, but I mean, Nick Saban had hip surgery in June on a Monday, and he was in his office on Wednesday, not because he needed to be. I mean, Nick Saban doesn't need to be in his office any day in the summertime because he's got about 40 people around him, including his 11 or 12 assistants and then 25 former head coaches in the other room as analysts. But he had to prove to you and me and everyone else that he could beat this thing and that he wasn't going to be at home walking on a cane. So, I mean, that's how he is wired, but that's how all these guys are wired. And I talked to somebody yesterday who has talked to a number of coaches, and he said that they're on the phone all day long. They're just talking. They're recruiting. They're doing whatever they can legally and who knows what else because they have to stay busy. And I go through the same thing. I mean, it's I'll be honest. As a talk show host for 2 weeks, I've had some pretty awkward moments on the air. I mean, you find your mood slipping away. You look up at the TV screen and there's another, you know, 50 deaths in New York, and you go, I mean, is the world really coming to an end? So I think if it's affecting me, if it's affecting you guys, it's affecting head coaches and assistant coaches even more.
Look, one of the things we all want is to believe that we have a little bit of control over something. And I think when we talk about coaches and when you mention Saban and some of these other guys, and it seems college football maybe more than any other sport, that lack of controlling anything has got to be the thing that's driving them crazy, because I know I have little pangs of that as well, and I can only imagine when you really, really have control over numbers of people, that's got to be what's bothering you the most.
Yeah, and staying with the Alabama story for 1 second, 2 weeks ago today, Saban met with his team at 12:30. They were supposed to have the first practice of spring at 1:30, and I'm told that he was fully intending to go forward with the practice. Now, remember, 2 weeks ago today was 24 hours after the NCAA basketball tournament was canceled, and everything else was canceled, and the NBA was shut down, and baseball was shut down. I mean, I think he thought, hey, I don't mean to be calling him out here. I'm just telling you what I was told. And then finally, the administrator said, Coach, we can't do it. And, you know, I get, whoever that guy was, and I think I know who it was, you have to give him credit for standing up. But you know, there are no rules when you're in the athletic world. Nothing stops you except something like this.
Hey, Paul, I'm not really aware, when you started in this whole business, who some of your, and I don't know if they were friends, I don't know if they were just business friends, sports talk friends, guys that you covered friends, but we were talking about some of the stories and backstories, you know, whether a guy was a JV coach who got $2,000 extra dollars to coach a girls' team and teach typing, you know, before guys got into coaching thinking it was always going to be a $1 million thing. Do you have guys that you sort of remember in the beginning of your career that had stories like that, that were truly not in it for the money, truly were hardly in it for the fame and the glory? It was just, this is what they did and this is what they wanted to be?
Yes, I believe most coaches and most people in athletics do it out of dedication. I mean, I've never run into somebody who said, you know, I got into this thing to be a millionaire. You know what? I think it's also applicable to what we do. I started out as a sports writer, making $145 a week in Shreveport, Louisiana. And in some ways, it was, I don't mean to, you know, go Charles Dickens on you here. I mean, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I had my power shut off, I had my water shut off, because I didn't have enough money to pay the light bills. But I covered things. I covered LSU, I covered the Dallas Cowboys, I covered the New Orleans Saints. I've never covered that much in my entire life. It was amazing. So I think that works for, I remember as a student at the University of Tennessee, Pat Summitt, the legendary coach, walked over to interview her one day. Her office was, I mean, I kid you not, it looked like a utility closet where you were in your radio station. They keep the mops and the brooms. And she mopped the floors, too, because that's what you had to do back then. You know, young people listening, the world of sports that some of us grew up in is not the same one that we currently live in. So back to your question, yeah, I mean, coaches in the summertime, they cut grass for money, because you did not make enough money being a high school coach or even a college coach at a lower level to get by.
Paul Feinbaum with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. I know you talked to Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt baseball coach, and I like what he said as well. Conversely, maybe we needed to all as a society decompress, and this is what it's forcing us to do.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the most interesting comments. I mean, because I guess you asked it predictable, like, how are you coping? And he said, very well. And what his point there was, he said, I think he's like 62 or 63 years old. He said, I've done this 35 years. I know I'm not going to do it that much longer. And for the first time, I'm starting to think about, well, maybe 4 or 5 years from now, I'll be doing what I'm doing now. And his point was, and his message was, appreciate what you're doing. And I'm not a philosopher, I promise you, but I'm kind of facing the same thing. I'm the same age, and I'm thinking, like, do I really want to do this every day? And you know what? The answer is yes. I am not ready to go to the grocery store with my wife when the grocery stores, you can go to the grocery store and walk around the block 100 times a day like so many of us are doing. I talked to a friend of mine who's a business executive in Atlanta yesterday, and he said, yeah, we're walking 10 miles a day. I mean, I said, well, great. I mean, but he'd rather be getting ready for the Final Four next week. And I think we're all conflicted by it. I think it's going to make a lot of relationships, and unfortunately, I'm not trying to go philosopher here, it's probably going to ruin a lot of relationships because, I mean, we all travel a lot. I spent 5 nights a week on the road during the fall, and I was so used to that schedule that the reentry into a normal sedentary life was unusual at first. I'm now starting, when I see the scenes from airports across the country, I don't miss them, but it is an adjustment. But I think we have to look at it from a positive standpoint as opposed to, you know, why is this happening to us?
I have two teenage daughters 2 weeks out now would rather be in school. Now, they're not going to remember this maybe next year. They're going to deny maybe they ever said it, but both of them would actually rather be getting up and going to school instead of doing their stuff at home. I do want to ask about Lane Kiffin coming back, Mike Leach coming in, and what the SEC might be. Once we get back to a little bit of normalcy, when those guys actually have their opportunities, both post games on Saturdays and what it is they might do during the week for sound bites and for guys in our business.
Yeah, when the announcement, only the SEC can get a day's worth of programming out of announcing who's going to be speaking in Atlanta at SEC Media Days on what day. When that came out about 5 weeks ago, we all were going like, okay, when's Kiffin? When's Mike Leach? And hopefully they're the same day. Now I must say, at this point, will we have a media days in Atlanta? I don't know. I hope so. But they are both individually intriguing. Kiffin is just a character. I mean, Kiffin is just a smart aleck frat boy from high school and college. I mean, you guys know him. Leach is more the erudite, sophisticated professor. When Mike Leach was out of coaching, I did a Saturday show on Sirius XM, and we were thrown together during the playoffs and big games. And he's one of the most interesting people I've ever met. Not talking about college football. I don't ever remember talking about that, but he will riff on bands of the 60s and 70s, political and social leaders, of all time, Shakespeare, Mozart. It doesn't matter. And that's, yeah, I like that because, guys, I mean, covering whether it's the ACC, the SEC, the NFL, most coaches are just incredibly boring.
Paul Feinbaum is with us, and you're right about that. He joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line. It's something we talked about a couple of days ago, speaking of those two coaches, going to match up in the Egg Bowl, how a post-touchdown celebration set the wheels in motion to have these coaches where they are today and other coaches move all around the place in the SEC. One kid started all of this, it seems.
Yeah, there's no question. It was the famous dog urinating moment after they thought they hadn't even scored a touchdown that would set them up for to tie the game, not even to win it. And of course, as a result of the penalty, they ended up losing. That one moment cost Matt Luke his job at Ole Miss. He was going to be retained. I had been there 2 weeks earlier. They had no appetite to fire him because from a financial standpoint. And then because of Kiffin coming in, the administrators at Mississippi State who were on the fence, who would have fired Joe Moorhead had he lost that game, began wondering, can Joe Moorhead deal with Lane Kiffin? And when Mississippi State lost some meaningless bowl game, I think it was in Nashville against someone, I swear I couldn't tell you who they lost to, I think it was a Big Ten school,
they made the decision to fire him and go after Leach, who had been wanting. He'd looked at a couple of SEC jobs over the years. He, Mike Leach, by the way, would have been the Tennessee head coach instead of Jeremy Pruitt. The athletic director, if you remember the story, was out in Los Angeles about to hire him. And when they found out, when the administration found out, they fired the athletic director. Leach told me once that he literally had the job. And then that set in motion Philip Fulmer coming back to take over for John Curry. And ultimately, they ended up with Jeremy Pruitt.
Paul, I don't know if you're doing some of the things you've been reading, some of these Field of 64s. Everybody's coming up with different scenarios, best bands, best movies, and ESPN's now doing the best college basketball player of all time. Might be interesting if you, and I think you more than anybody else, might be able to lead it. The 64 greatest characters of the SEC, whether it's players, coaches, administrators, there's probably something in there in the SEC where, and you could decide what interesting is. You can certainly do successful and have Saban and Bear Bryant and Adolph Rupp in there. But there's probably something around the SEC that might make some sense in that regard.
No, I would agree. And as I alluded, there are a few characters around. But you go back in time, I'm going to have to really do a deep dive because, I mean, people always ask, like, who's the best player of all time? And, you know, that's an argument that sometimes Tebow gets mentioned, other people get mentioned. But characters are a whole nother story. And, you know, man, and that's why I am so excited by Mike Leach and Kiffin, because, I don't know about you, but you go to a media days and, you know, I mean, at the SEC network, not only do we talk about it every day of the year, we have to listen to the entire press conference on the air. So, and guys, I know that you've done it in your career, but as a former sports writer, I would have to sit there and take notes on it. Fortunately, now I just tune it out. But as I'm criticizing those hour long press conferences, I'm now beginning to think, you know what? Wouldn't that be nice to have today?
Yeah. It's like the kids being out of school that Chris just talked about. You wish you were back.
I'll say one thing about that. My wife always tells me this because being in medicine her whole life, she said you don't realize what good health is until you don't have it. You take it for granted. Hey, I feel normal today. But when you see people who are deathly ill right now and what they wouldn't give to go outside for a breath of fresh air, I think we all take so many things for granted. But I think that's where I would start in all of this. And I live for that day when I don't have to watch CNN anymore.
I don't want to leave the lead on the ground. How does a guy making $145 a week covering LSU sports and going over to the Cowboys actually end up marrying a doctor?
Because my college girlfriend dumped me because I moved to Shreveport, Louisiana. I was such a big time sports writer, guys, that coming out of school, I had two offers. I had an offer from the Bristol, Tennessee Courier and the Shreveport Journal. My girlfriend was from the Tri-Cities, which is Kingsport, Johnson City, Bristol. I chose Shreveport. About 2 months later, she dumped me for some guy that, I think's, a milkman now. And so I went through this long, odyssey, and I thought when I moved to Birmingham, I met her. The old line on her was she had a lot of book sense, but no common sense.
And you wooed her how? What was your winning move?
I was pretty quiet. The good news is, this is going to sound like some reality show, but she lived on the apartment above me, and she had just got back. She had done her residency at Vanderbilt, and I was already now 10 years in on being a sports writer. She didn't know who I was, so I didn't have to deal with all the negativity of why do you hate Alabama, why do you hate Auburn, why are you always blasting Georgia. So she just thought, she said, well, what do you do? I said, I'm in the I'm in the information business. I think she thought I was a computer expert. And she really had no earthly idea who I was, which helped me immensely. I still haven't told her what I do for a living.
Well, we thank her. I'm sure she's out there trying to save some people. We thank you for coming on with us. And hopefully when we talk again, we'll be talking about the actual games getting ready to be played. Paul Feinbaum from the SEC Network, ESPN, we appreciate you coming on with us.
Guys, the pleasure was mine. Look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, Paul Feinbaum on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.